You're going to love the next guest. Andy Harvey is in the house. He comes with over 23 years of experience in law enforcement, and he retired as the chief of police in Palestine, Texas. Andy's many years of experience include investigations, community policing, patrol, and media relations. He is also a motivational speaker. He travels all around the country talking to law enforcement professionals everywhere. Lastly, an amazing author. You have got to pick up his book, a must read for all law enforcement professionals, Excellence in Policing, Simple Ways to Exceed Citizens' Expectation in Every Encounter. Andy Harvey, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in. Whatever you are doing, wherever you are at, thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. Big shout out to all the brave men and women out there, brave men and women who protect this country every day, working in communities. Maybe you're in the military. Thank you for what you do. We would not have this great country if it wasn't for your sacrifice, you getting up every morning and serving. So important. You have much support. Keep up the fantastic work. Oh man, I am super pumped. My book is coming soon. It's called Evolve, a collection of routines, habits, and advice to take charge of your life and be your best self. Again, on its way. I cannot wait. You will be the first to know when it drops. Big shout out to our sponsor, Detectachem. This amazing technology, I wish they had this when I was a young officer. It just fits in the palm of your hand, detecting illicit drugs, explosives. It's all technology, folks. Again, I wish they had it when I was a young officer, but they have it now, and it is fantastic, protecting our brave men and women who protect us every day. Head over to the website, cjevolution.com. Click on the link to Detectachem and see how they can help keep your troops safe. Are you struggling to keep up with your extra duty program along with all your other projects and assignments? Let me tell you about my good friends at Extra Duty Solutions. They help law enforcement agencies add efficiency and effectiveness to their extra duty programs. They work with agencies to administer their extra duty programs in the areas such as client interaction, scheduling, invoicing, collections, officer payments, problem resolution. Their services are provided at no cost to the department and a minimal cost to the clients, and their programs can be customized to meet the goals and unique needs of any law enforcement agency. If you head over to extradutysolutions.com, that's extradutysolutions.com, see how they can help you with your extra duty program and tell them Patrick from CJ Evolution sent you. On to the show with Andy Harvey. Hello, everybody. Yes. Welcome back. I am very, very excited to have my next guest on the show, Andy Harvey. Welcome, sir.
Well, thanks for having me, Patrick. I appreciate it.
Well, I know you're very busy, sir, and I always appreciate all the guests taking the time to come on. And first of all, as I indicated in the bio, thank you for your service, many years in law enforcement, and your service to the military, sir.
Well, it was a pleasure and what an honor, right, to be able to do that. And I know you have kind of similar background, so you get it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's just great, great honor, right?
Now, what made you, I ask all Leos that come on the show, sir, Andy, what made you get into law enforcement in the military? What was the catalyst, you know?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I didn't have, I'm not that guy, right, that had a dream of becoming a police officer, right? It really just happened. And I'm going to be very real here, right? It just kind of happened. I was newly married, had a baby. I knew that I needed to have a job, some kind of a full-time steady job, right? And that I had thought about policing, but not really in the sense that, wow, that's all I wanted to do. So an opportunity came up, long story short, too late for that. Dallas PD over in Dallas, Texas was hiring. They were having a recruiting seminar or some efforts there in San Antonio where I was at the time. And I said, you know what? What the heck? I'm not doing anything this weekend. Let me go check it out. Well, so everything just fell into place. And the more I thought about it, the more I started looking into it. Wow. I was just like, yes, 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 yes. This is very, very cool. I want to do this. I want to do this. And everything happened. And next thing you know, I'm sitting in Dallas, Texas, in a police academy with my, you know, wife and my our young daughter, not knowing a soul in Dallas. And so here we go, right? And fast forward 23, almost 24 years later, it's been an unbelievable journey.
Yeah. Now, what was your wife's thought, you know, because it takes, you know, a strong spouse, Andy, to be married to a law enforcement professional. I'm assuming your wife was very supportive, or was some trepidation there with
No. She was very supportive. However, right, it's funny. It's a funny story. After I graduated the academy, and you know, things got real, right? So it's like, like this is for real. He's actually going out like to the streets, right? And I remember putting on my uniform that very first day, and as I'm walking out the door, my wife said, "Just let him run." So yeah, there was some trepidation. Yeah, of course, there was some fear and some worries, concern, and but I'll never forget that, right? I mean, you know, I said I can't let them run. That's why I'm here, right? You know, but I understand her heart. I get it, right? And she, so her, like many spouses, are concerned about their loved ones, and that's a very real thing, right? So it's funny story, but there's some truth to that, right?
Oh yeah. I know that for a fact. Now, you rose all the way up to the rank of chief of police, which is quite an accomplishment. I know you weren't with Dallas, but you went to Palestine, Texas, correct?
Yes.
Now, what was your experience? I mean, I think, because I was on the, I mean, I wasn't a chief, but I was a commander. And I remember as a patrol officer, you know, you're always, oh, they don't know what's going on. You know, they're just out of touch. At least that's, you know, I heard when I was a patrol officer, and I participated in that too. But once you start to get to those upper realms, the 30, 40,000 foot level, it's a very difficult job. Can you talk about some of your experiences as a chief of police? Because it is not an easy job. Some people think, oh, they don't do anything. Are you kidding?
Well, it's true, right? So of course, like you and I going through the ranks, we understand the mentality mm-hmm. of line officers, and so it's a very real thing. We get it. However, when as you rise up, your world changes a little bit, just like you're talking about, your aerial view changes, and it has to, right? Because if you stay at a 10,000 foot level, you can't make decisions that should be based up on a 30,000 foot level. So your world has to change and the way you see things. So now you're responsible for not only your officers, now you're accountable to for the department, you have to accountable to the community. Now you have a city council, that's a whole other world. Now you have a city manager or mayor or however that works. And so there are lots of people with different, right, agendas and different responsibilities and priorities. So you have to be able to maneuver and get through that as best as you can. And here's what I learned. You will never make everyone happy. And as a chief, you have to understand that. You can try, and I did, but there were times I just, you know, had to make a decision, and there were going to be some people that were not happy. And I, you know, at first I didn't like it. Of course you want to make, you know, people happy. That's what we're here for. But that's not reality, right? And so you have to understand that you're going to make tough decisions. And that's why they say it's lonely at the top, right? Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be. It doesn't have to be that way. But that's one of the reasons I think people say it's lonely at the top, because at times it is. And I think that was a big thing for me.
Yeah. And I know when I started rising up to the ranks and I got promoted, you know, because I – you know, one minute I had sergeants that were in charge of me, then I got promoted and now I was in charge of them.
Oh, right. These right.
Guys I grew up with in the department. And I quickly learned that even though I got promoted and now I was their boss, I still had to earn their respect. And you can respect the rank, but I had to earn that respect from those officers again. And,
oh yeah,
you know, it took some time, you know, because I was so focused initially on, well, I got to be friends with everybody. And I quickly learned, sometimes you can't, man.
Right. And so that's when you find out, right, who your true friends are in the first place, right? Because if they're truly your friends and you happen to rise up and now you're their superior, you know, You'll find that out really quickly. But I love what you said, right? Respect the rank. And you don't have to respect the person. It's better if you do, but at least respect the rank. That's a military thing. I love that. I was a first sergeant, by the way. So I love that. Yeah, right. So that's a whole other world, right? But I'll tell you, it's a weird dynamic when that happens. But again, you have to earn trust. Your rank or your status doesn't earn you respect. That goes only a small way. But the way you lead people and the way you develop them and just bit by bit, you start earning their trust. Then that's a different world. And that's what we should be striving for. If you're leading only by rank, your position, good luck with that. Right.
Well, and I think you and I have seen people like that, Andy, you know,
career,
and they're not successful.
And what does it do to you? What did it do to you and to your fellow officers, right? Very frustrating. You know, your satisfaction, your motivation, your production, all that goes down. And so it has an effect on other people. So that's why leadership is the most important when it comes to having a healthy organization.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit in a few minutes about, you know, leadership again, but you've done so much in your career, Andy. I mean, you continue to give back to first responders, law enforcement everywhere. What were some of your greatest achievements in your law enforcement career? I'm sure you have many, but can you name some highlights?
You know, after a long career, you start forgetting some of those, but
yeah, me too.
I'll tell you, I'm very proud. I really am. And, of the work that we did. And I say we in Palestine and as a chief, that was my first chief gig. Right. And that was, it was an eye opener. But, I believe that we transformed, and I say we and the people around me and the department, we transformed that department from probably kind of an unhealthy department, very highly entitled, low trust department into a healthy department, one that had a succession plan and one that was relevant in the community. I think that was the biggest thing. And so when I look back at the last few years there, I'm like, wow, I think we did some things because the community noticed. And when the community notices that, then you're doing something. And so I think, in a nutshell, the work that we did there as an organization, I'm very proud of that. You know, for the first time, you know, since day one for me there was to build a succession plan, right? That's what leaders do, right? Future focus. We're looking 5-10 years down the road. And I knew that we needed somebody internal. Now, they haven't had an internal chief there since 1979. And there was rumblings in the community about we need someone homegrown and that kind of thing. And I get it. Yeah, that would be great. But they just didn't have anybody at the time, you know, to promote from within. And I wanted to make sure we did that. And I have a chief now that took my place that I'm just very proud of, that young man. I invested in him as much as I could. And to see them and leave them at a healthy place, man, is a huge, huge prideful moment for me, right? So it just really, really, that's probably my greatest achievement.
That's a good way to go out there, sir. Go out on top, you know, and you help build that department along with the brave men and women who served under you. I really like what you talked about, Andy, about community, and I want to talk about that for a minute. You know, community relationships, as you know, have always been important, central to law enforcement operations. I think now more than ever, I mean, you turn on the news, you see it, Andy, other people listening see it. Law enforcement has taken a beating and, you know, sometimes deserved, but most of the time, I don't think so. How can agencies improve relationships with their communities?
Well, I wrote a book called Excellence in Policing, and here's what I believe. I poured my heart into it, and so here's the message. I think we're missing out on an opportunity every day when we encounter citizens. So I do believe that the power is during every police-citizen encounter and how we, the police, manage that, right? And if we have a better understanding of what the community, and by the way, their expectations have changed, right? So we have to keep up with that. If we have a better understanding of what they expect from us, how they perceive us, then perhaps we can manage those encounters a lot better. I do believe that officers are doing 99 point whatever percent of the time, they're doing a great job. It's a hard job. You know that, Patrick.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think most of the time, when citizens, you know, leave after an encounter and they're like scratching their head or they're maybe feel like they were not treated right, I think most of the time, I believe, that officers just fail to manage perception. Mm-hmm. And so we have to care about that now because people are more informed. They're more intuitive. They're interested in what we're doing. And that's a good thing, but we also have to do our part in managing that. So I think the way you build community trust is one encounter at a time, make sure that you're being excellent and being open and those things that we should be doing. And when we do that, we're better for it. Here's what I learned. This is a very powerful thing. And I talk about it in the book, or I write about it. And I talk about it wherever I can, because I think this is the powerful part here, is that if we understand that people are more concerned or more interested in the way they're treated than even the outcome, that's a very powerful thing for us. Mm-hmm. So that means that an officer can write a citation or even take somebody to jail. Patrick, I'm sure you've taken someone to jail, and when you booked them in, they said, thank you.
Yes.
Yep. That's a weird thing, right?
Very weird.
What do you mean, thank you? I'm just, you know, but you know why? And you know this, Patrick, because you treated them with some fairness, dignity, and respect. Mm-hmm. And probably respect and dignity is the most important thing. So when we do that, we can still enforce laws. We can still conduct business. But if we do it in a way that we're being intentional about being fair and open and treating people with dignity and respect, we're much better for it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Andy. And you know, I lecture and teach at the academy sometimes, and I always asked, you know, the question, you know, what's your most important weapon you have? And everybody, you know, is, well, you know, my gun, you know, my.
Right.
And a few people say, well, isn't it your mouth?
Wow. There you go. Like,
I think so. I think, you know, there's a time and a place, obviously, for the other tools on your belt, but I would rather talk my way out of something and resolve it that way. I'm not saying that you can't go the other way sometimes, but it goes back to what you were saying, Chief, about, you know, respect. Most of the time, people are going to reciprocate.
Big time, big time. And the thing about it is, right, if we're waiting for them to people to respect us first, well, you're going to be waiting sometime. So we have to be, I call it just being the adult in the room. We have to be better than that. And so we have to show respect. And listen, we get it. It's hard to sometimes. People are difficult and challenging. But when we give it first, when we right, most of the time that will, like you said, it will be reciprocated, and then that's a good thing. But we have to be intentional about that again.
Yeah. Now let's circle back, Chief, if you don't mind. Let's talk about leadership. You know, hot topic. It's always been a topic in law enforcement for good reason. What are some good traits of a good leader?
Yeah, you know, I think most of it is your people have to know that you care about their best interest, right? About them personally. And then everything else follows. If they believe that you don't have their best interest in mind, or you don't care about them as a person, then it's going to be really hard to have and to get things done and to get things done at a high level. So I think being compassionate and you know, I call it, and I've heard it called compassionate accountability. I think that's a good thing for us, and not only in policing, but anywhere. See, we can still hold people accountable, but still care for the person. Mm-hmm. And when people know that you care about them, when you hold them accountable, they can accept that, right? And or better, still hard. Right. But they can at least accept that and come to terms with it, because they know at the end of the day, you still love them. Yeah, I said love. You know, we don't talk about that very much, but we have to love people. And I think if you're going to be a great police officer, first of all, you have to love people. So when you're leading police officers, guess what? You have to love your police officers. And sometimes they're like your kids, right? You show them tough love, right? I mean, really.
No, they are.
You show them tough love, right? And so sometimes you got to do that. But if they don't know that you love them first, and then you have to, that's a very difficult thing. So I think that's the most important. And then, you know, of course, all the other traits that we see, emotional intelligence, understanding your own emotions and understanding their emotions, and listening and being open, and those things that are very important. I'll tell you one more that I think is very, very, that's overlooked a lot. If you're insecure, if you're insecure as a leader, you're going to have a rough time. Mm-hmm. So you have to be confident, and the opposite of insecurity is confident. So, and now, not cocky, just confident, right? And I think people want to see a balance of humility, confidence, and that goes a long way.
Yeah, I love it. And how important, Andy, do you think mindset is, you know, to officers? I mean, having the right mindset, I mean, staying positive. I know it's a tough job. You and I both have done it for many years. But I saw in organizations that, you know, officers get disgruntled very, very quickly. I always say that law enforcement, it's an inherently toxic environment. You know, we see people at their worst, but it doesn't have to be internally toxic. And that is a hard thing. You as a chief, that's a hard thing to grapple sometimes and manage, because there's always a couple of those people in an organization that are just don't want to be there.
That's right. And I think what happens is, and that's a reality, right? It's not the external BS. It's most of it the internal BS, exactly. Right? That we have to put up with. And so we have to manage that as leaders. And we talk about, you know, the big term in policing now is procedural justice. And that pretty much that's treating people with fairness, dignity, and respect. And I believe in that. We have to do that internally too, with each other. And so as leaders, we have to emulate that, right? Mm-hmm. We have to show our officers, we have to show them that we're being fair and show them dignity and respect. And I think when you do that, that helps a lot, but it has to be done at every level of the organization. Now I've got to travel a little bit around the country and talk to chiefs of police in major cities and small towns. I'll tell you the number one challenge that they tell me, because I'll ask them straight up, what is your number one challenge? And all the time I'm telling you, they say it's my first line leadership. They're not engaged enough. They're friends, just like you and I were talking. And so that's the biggest challenge. If we can get to them and they can carry the flag, right, of the organization, man, that's a powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And then when you have a culture of excellence, I call it just, you know, excellence, because now your standards are higher and you expect higher from each or more from each other. When you do that, that squeezes out the people that don't want to be there. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So eventually they will leave on their own. They will do something dumb and get terminated or something like that. But eventually they will leave the organization because it's too much for them to change. Right. And when they see other people changing and becoming a culture of excellence, those people that don't want to be eventually will leave. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's actually a good thing.
No, you want the right people on the bus.
There you go. That's it.
And it made me think, Andy, when you were talking about, you know, if my first line supervisors, i.e. sergeants, corporals, were not engaging with their officers, I would do a little self-reflection being a commander in charge of those guys. I would be like, I'm not doing my job.
That's it. It's you got to look at yourself. Yeah. And as leaders, it's our responsibility. So you have to ask yourself, what am I doing? What am I not doing enough, or what am I doing wrong, or what do I need to do more of? You know, so it's always self-reflection. It's always, and I do it every day. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, every day I think, what did I do today that was good? What did I do today that I could have done better? As simple as maybe a conversation with an officer. You know what? I didn't even acknowledge that great arrest. I didn't listen. I spoke too much. Whatever that is, I'm always self-reflecting. And to make sure that I'm getting better. But that's an important part of it. And listen, you have to not just self-reflect on the good stuff. That's the easy part. You have to understand, you know, where you screwed up, right? And when you do that, say, okay, look at yourself in the mirror and says, I got to be better. Yeah. I got to be better than this.
Now, what made you, I mean, because I always talk about this a lot in my shows about, I think every cop out there has a book in them. You wrote Excellence in Policing, Simple Ways to Exceed Citizens' Expectations in Every Encounter. Mm-hmm. It'll be linked up in the show notes, Andy, but what made you say, you know, I want a book? Because I think a lot of people say, well, I'm going to write a book. They never do. So what was the catalyst? What made you say, you know, I'm going to do this?
Well, because when I was in grad school, I purposely wanted to learn more about community perception, right? That was, I want to know that as a leader that we're doing things that are in the best interest of both of us, right? When I say both of us, policing, community, sometimes we do things for the sake of doing things so that we can tell people that we're doing things, right? But they're not effective. And so that always, you know, growing, you know, when you go up the ranks, you're like, why in the hell are we doing this, right? This makes no sense at all, but whatever. And so I wanted to make sure when we do stuff, it's significant that we're having an impact. So I started doing research and I came across a word called procedural justice. Now it's a common word, but before it was kind of a new thing, very new thing. So, and what I told you earlier about people care more about how they're treated even more than the outcome, I said, aha, there is an opportunity right there to affect change, even if it's just, you know, one click to the right, then we're doing something. Mm-hmm. And so I really took that because I thought, wow, you know, if people, you know, if I give them a break, let's say it's, you know, warning instead of a citation, they're going to be happy automatically. Not true. And so I said, man, maybe a lot of people think like I do because I'm not that smart, right? I thought maybe most people, you know, maybe, I don't know. I'm like, is this right? So as I did more research and that's what it says. It says people are more interested in how they're treated. So I said, man, this is something we got to focus on. Yeah. And then Ferguson came along and those, and I said, we got to get back to basics. Yeah. Let's get back to basics, how we treat people. And so that was the catalyst for the book. I've been speaking on it for a while, teaching it. And so I just put that into a book. And by the way, it's the hardest thing I ever did, even though it's an easy read.
Yeah,
it's the hardest thing I ever did because you're going back every time and you're rereading it. You're like, no, I don't like that. I don't like that word. And but anyway, so that was the catalyst for the book.
Nice. And it'll be linked up, Andy, in the show notes.
Man, cool, man. I appreciate it. But by the way, it's on audio. Can you believe that? The weirdest thing, if you ever, when you write your book, Patrick, I know you have one, or put it on audio. It's the weirdest thing.
I don't know. So did you narrate it yourself or did you have somebody else do it?
I did. So, you know, I had a guy that would help me do the intros and all that. Somebody with a nice voice, not like mine. But I wanted it to be me, right? Because this is me talking. This is my message. And so I did it. But I'll tell you, it's the strangest thing recording it. It's. So do it, Patrick, one of these days.
Now, Andy, did you, because I know you're bilingual. Spanish is actually your first language, right?
Yeah, you know, so my mother was from Mexico. I grew up down in the border town of Texas, Harlingen, Texas, in the border. And so my mother came over, and I'm very open about that. She came over as an undocumented immigrant when she was young and, you know, married my dad. And here I am, right? But so I'm, you know, my first language at home, we spoke Spanish, and that was our culture. So my culture is what I know is the Mexican culture. That's who I am. And, you know, I make no bones about it, but that's who I am. And I want everybody to be proud of who they are. That's who I am.
Should be. And I was just thinking you could do a bilingual version of your book too.
Well, yeah, you know, so I was thinking about that, and that may happen. For sure.
So, Andy, what advice, you know, would you give somebody out there who is considering or pondering a career in law enforcement?
Here's what I tell people, that in spite of what you see on the news and on your phone, people still believe in the police. People still call 911. People haven't given up hope in police. As a matter of fact, they're still, if you look poll after poll, people still respect the police and have a high regard for police more than most other professions. Mm-hmm. So don't believe that, right? Because that's a very small minority that may not trust the police. And but we need to work on that, by the way. But here's the overall message. People still believe in you. If you want to come and you want to help people and you really want to serve a community and be part of this change, come on. Let's do it. Don't just, sit back there and I can't believe the police. Well, come on and be a part of it. There's room for you. And so I hope young people, and I think young people these days want to have a serve, right? They want to, a lot of them are attracted to service type jobs. This is it. This is a great career. And so come on.
And I think, I think the younger generations, I think they get a bad rap too. And I always tell people, look, they have a lot to offer. I mean, there's always, bad apples in the barrel, but these young people out there, I agree with you 100%, Andy. They want to serve, my youngest son is 18. He just joined the Air Force. I mean, a lot of kids out there serve, but I think we tend to look at them and say, well, they're lazy. They don't have anything to offer. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I do think that would give them a bad rap too. Listen, they're young. You and I were young once and we thought differently. So to put different expectations on them, I think is not good for us. So yes. Listen, they're young people. They're motivated. We just have to, adjust, right? Because policing historically has been resistant to change.
Yeah.
And so when you and I came on, we had to sit, in training, I had to sit at a certain place, couldn't talk to certain officers. Listen, we're not there anymore. Mm-hmm. We have to engage these young folks and we have to make them a part of this organization or our profession from day one. Mm-hmm. So this old adage, they have to earn and blah, blah, blah. They have to pay their dues. Well, I get that, right? But let's be very real. If you want young people to serve, you have to give them a reason to want to serve and be part of your organization, because if they don't, they will leave you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one thing I learned, Andy, really quick was the younger generation, money's important to everybody, but they want to be inspired. To be motivated. Money is not going to, the one thing I've learned over the years, especially when I was in, had some rank was, people want to, they don't live to work anymore like you and I did, when we were young. They work to live.
Big time, yeah. And so let's tap into that. Yeah. Right? Let's not be resistant to that. Let's tap into that. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I do think our profession is still in good hands. And I think, but it's up to us, right, as leaders, to leave it better than even how we found it.
Yeah.
So how do we do that, right? And that's by being relevant. That's by engaging the next generation and leaving it better for them, and so that they can do the same for the following generation. Now we're thinking decades, right?
Yeah.
But we have to start it. We have to do it.
Yeah. Well, Andy Harvey, how can people find you, sir? If they want to reach out to you, what's the best place they can find you?
Man, I'm everywhere. Social media. I still have my Twitter. I'm very active on Twitter, Chief Harvey, PPD, LinkedIn, Andy Harvey, of course, and you'll find me. My new website will be up here soon, but I'm very easy. Just Google me. You can email me at andy@excellenceinpolicing.tv. And reach out to me if there's anything I can do for anyone. They want part of this message or whatever. Let me know. I'm happy to help.
Well, Andy Harvey, thank you so much, sir. Such an honor to have you on the show, your distinguished law enforcement career, military career. And I love that you keep giving back to our brave men and women. Anything we can do for you, sir, in the future, please reach out to me.
Well, here's the deal, Patrick. I came on your podcast. So now, so get ready, because you're going to be on mine.
You got it, sir. Anytime.
All right, Patrick. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.